Hello and welcome to a National Academic Integrity podcast. My name's Sue Hackett, I'm the NAIM manager, and today I'm joined by Dr. Yvonne Kavanagh, Director of Research at the Southeast Technological University, and Ashley Reist, Head of Quality at the Royal College of Surgeons, Ireland. Yvonne and Aisling are both founder members of the NAIN, the National Academic Integrity Network, and co-chairs of one of our very productive working groups. Under their leadership, they've recently completed the development of an exciting new resource, the NAIN Framework for Academic Integrity Investigation and Case Management. This is an online publication available on the NAIN pages on the QQI website. And so today we're going to have a conversation in which they're going to share how this resource was developed and possibly how it can be used and implemented into everyday practice. So welcome, Yvonne and Aisling, to today's podcast.
Thanks, Sue.
It's really great to have you here, and thank you so much for giving up your extremely valuable time. I know how busy everybody is. I suppose we might start, Yvonne, with you, with the first question, which is really, what was the catalyst for developing the framework, and were there any sort of prior activities or ideas which inspired the creation of it?
Over Thanks, Sue. Basically, we had been working on the lexicon, the principles of academic integrity, and the guidelines for academic integrity. And always we were drawn back to the other side, if you like, because we were there to promote academic integrity. And then we were seeing that we had academic misconduct. So when, you know, they're both sides of the one coin. So we started a lot of different conversations around it, even the definition of academic misconduct. It involves so many different areas and so many different headlines. And we figured that, you know, nobody really had a handle on where we are at with academic misconduct nationally. And then Working Group 2 at the time carried out some initial kind of investigations into how things were going with academic misconduct in the country. And again, it was coming back very varied because nobody had these clear definitions in their head and nobody really was looking at where exactly academic misconduct was. So that's what started our thinking. So these were the prior activities that actually started us thinking about, yeah, we need a framework for academic misconduct. But then looking at where we went, we had to look and see what we actually did. So we wanted to be very descriptive rather than prescriptive. So we wanted to kind of look at the institutional autonomy and actually respect that and actually go with a framework that works for all, but you can see where you want to draw from and where you think you can enhance your own work, because a lot of people are doing a lot of great things. But it was more to get a national kind of conversation going as well, I think, on the creation and creating that framework rather than being more specific in guidelines and that. I think that's about it. Yeah, thanks.
Thanks, Yvonne. And I really like your emphasis on the institutional autonomy there. I think that's a really well made point. And indeed, recognising all the good stuff that's already happening. Yeah. So how many were involved in the initial planning, and how did you come up with the structure? Aisling, over to you.
Well, I think we were very lucky in that, I suppose. From the very, very start of NAIN, in fact, at the very first network meeting, we had some working groups established to lead developments and initiatives in lots of different areas. So everything we have ever done within NAIN has been peer driven and really is led by and created by the community of higher ed in Ireland. So by the time we started planning this document, we already had Working Group 1. And as Yvonne said, they had developed the lexicon and guidelines. So we had a group of people who were very experienced in terms of, you know, doing this kind of work. We were also very lucky in that it's a diverse group. So it's about 16 people. They come from both academic backgrounds, but also professional backgrounds in universities. And they come from universities, private higher ed, public higher ed, all the spectrum really of institutions that could be available. And that's really important, because we don't want to create documents that work for, you know, a small subset of people. And so far as possible, we want them to work for everybody. So within that working group, we created three subgroups, and we've done this with previous projects because we found that this was a good way really to divide the load as much as possible. So the three subgroups, the first one looked at the possible cycle of managing academic misconduct. The second group looked at how academic misconduct was reported and the key policy points. And then our last group looked at exemplar templates to support staff in case management. Each of those three groups went off and looked at, I suppose, national and international relevant literature, relevant practice, and they drafted three initial papers. And that was, I suppose, the foundation of our work, developing the framework.
Yes, that's really interesting. And all that heterogeneous sort of capacity in the group really was a really strong positive, I think. Would that be fair to say?
I mean, I think it's essential, you know, because we all work in higher education institutions that are just inherently diverse. Our student populations are diverse. The programmes we teach are diverse. Our governance structures are diverse. And therefore, it's really important that insofar as possible, everything that the name does reflects that diversity. And that's why we're so lucky to have such a broad membership and such an engaged membership, I think.
Yes, absolutely. What were the challenges that you encountered? Yvonne, over to you there.
Basically, the biggest challenge was the scope. I mean, this is a massive area, you know, as I said, you know, you can get all the different definitions, you know, malpractice, fraud, data, you know, data fabrication, everything comes under academic misconduct. So the scope of this was the biggest thing, like, how do we actually frame it? How do we get it into a framework? And how do we take an umbrella approach? Because we don't want to get into the nitty gritty. We didn't want to get into different, you know, areas, specific areas, which may relate, as Aisling said, to a particular type of HEI, but may be of total irrelevance to another type of HEI. And this is where we wanted it to be universally appealing as well and cover everybody. And we wanted to make it so that it was, as I say, this overarching kind of work, which, you know, when generative AI came along, we had to change like a paragraph. Do you know what I mean? We weren't looking at redrafting the whole thing. I think, as Aisling said too there, that we had the two stages. So we first of all had these three discussion papers, which we sent out to everyone, which was really, really kind of framing what we wanted to do and where we're going in the right direction, because maybe everybody wouldn't like this. So that was another challenge. And that's why we did that, so that we wanted to make sure that everyone was on board with us. And then when we went then to draft the document from that, we had the feedback from that as well. And I think that that actually enabled us and helped us to go forward with this. And again, we were looking at everybody's perspective. People are siloed, you know, you're in the academic world, you're in the academic world, and you don't want to see anything else. You're in the quality world, you don't want to see anything else. You're a student, you don't want to see anything else. Whereas, as Aisling said, the diversity in our group, we were able to bring all those perspectives together. And we also wanted to make it easy for staff to engage. That was another challenge. You know, lots of documents come out and they say beautiful things, and then there's no actual hard help behind them. So we wanted especially to bring forward these templates so that, yes, OK, we say this is the way it might be approached in your institution, and here's a template to help you with it. And here's where we want to go. And another challenge was academic misconduct doesn't shout education. Mm. You know, it doesn't shout, we're going to help you here. And we wanted to make sure that that was really integrated into the process and make sure that we'd say at stage one, students were supported, rather than the emphasis was on support and education rather than punishment and, you know, throwing them out of the institution. So we wanted to get that frame as well so that we can go forward then in our reporting, even so that if you have a million people, you know, at stage one, that's great because you're going to educate everyone, you know. So that's where we want to make sure that we have that inclusiveness. I think that would summarize it.
Yes, thank you. And clearly you were engaging with lots of people. I mean, I can really pick that up from what you've said there. Could you comment on the process, Aisling? Would you like to kind of add to what Yvonne has said there?
Yeah, I think the interesting part about the process is, you know, I think as we look back, there were like with any project, there was bits that worked really well and happened really quickly, and then other bits that just took much more time than we were expecting. So I think, you know, because of the working group structure that we set up and the three subgroups that created those discussion papers that Yvonne spoke about, because they had those distinct areas, actually their work was incredibly efficient and completed very, very quickly. So I think we thought we were flying at that stage, which was great. But also that distinction and focus between the groups created some challenges as we tried to pull those three areas together and create some kind of coherence across the project. I think another area that took a little bit more time than we expected was the response to the final consultation that we did. And I think it was always very important to Yvonne and I, and indeed to our colleagues on the steering committee and to colleagues in QQI, that the sector had real ownership of this framework. And that, as we've said already, insofar as possible, it reflected their needs and their experiences. And we had run some smaller scale consultations earlier in the process and had some engagement, but relatively, you know, small amount of engagement. But our final consultation massively engaged the sector, and we really had a huge volume of response. I think nearly all HEIs responded. We'd also responses from professional regulatory statutory bodies. We had, I think, TIA, IUA, HECA and NSTEP. So loads and loads of feedback. And all of this feedback was extremely valuable, but if I'm honest, I think quite overwhelming. So Yvonne and I had lots of meetings where we would go through all of the comments individually, consider how we could use that feedback to create reflect a sectoral view. And often we made quite considerable changes as a result of that feedback. But other times, I think what was really interesting was that we had conflicting feedback. So some stakeholders wanting more prescriptive guidelines and others in the same area looking for more autonomy. So when that happened, we kind of felt like we probably had hit the sweet spot. But we were also conscious that we didn't want Yvonne and I to be the only people looking at that feedback. So once we had reviewed it all, we went back to our working group again and said, can you sense check that we've responded well to this feedback? So what we really have now is a community created document. And I think that's a massive plus to it. But it did take a little bit more time. And I think the final thing that took considerable effort was the work that you and Billy Kelly did at the very end, proofing and reference checking the document for publication, because I think that the joy of a community created document is there's so much input into it. But also it does mean that, you know, those checks are massively important at the end. And I think Yvonne and I are massively grateful to you, because I think we had gone completely document blind by the end of that process. So lots of learning, I think I would say, across that project, which I think hopefully we bring into everything else we do, either in Nain or in our personal and work lives going forward.
Thank you so much. Yes, and the volume of feedback was phenomenal, wasn't it? It really emphasised the engagement with and the interest in the project and the, you know, the framework once it was finalised. And Yvonne, just picking up on your point there, you know, that what happened over the year in which it was being developed, so the Gen AI piece, yes, of course, and of course Kath Ellis and Kane's new model, which we were so lucky to be able to incorporate into the framework as well. It's still pending publication, but will be published very shortly, and it's incorporated into the framework, which is really excellent. What do you think, what would you like to see? I suppose it's, you've kind of touched on this already, but Yvonne, I'm looking at you, what would you like to see happen to the framework now in the HEI space? What do you think is particularly useful as a starting point?
Well, I think you just mentioned it there before, Sue, that Kath and Kane, Kath Ellis and Kane Murdoch's paper is absolutely fantastic. Their framework that they have there, you know, on the types of students, on the types of misconduct and that is a nice starting point. And as you can see from that, the educative piece in academic misconduct is so important. And the fact that the framework, out of the framework came these three stages, you know, where we have the poor academic conduct, which is where we can educate people, then academic misconduct level one, and then the more serious academic misconduct level two, if you like. And we frame them as that, and other people might make it into four. But I think that that itself, and actually framing that, actually is very helpful to the whole HEI community in how we go forward and how we report in particular. So I think that would be most useful. And I think that the, you know, making it more student focused and leading to more engagement then, especially at that level. So where we can make sure that people are educated, and we don't have those a lot of people in level two or level three, because we are actively engaging at level one, at academic, you know, where the students can change at this first level of academic misconduct.
Yes, thank you. Great points. I mean, we're seeing now, as you know, a lot of new appointments or new roles in higher ed institutions here, giving responsibility for kind of leading on academic integrity in the institution. So I think this is, and that's really within the last 12 months, isn't it? So I think this document will be enormously useful in that context, very much as you said. Kind of leading on from those points, Aisling, what longer term impacts would you like to see, or do you think it may trigger?
Well, I think that's going to be really interesting to see, and I think one of the things that was really useful was that during the consultation we actually asked about impact, potential impact, and I think that was the point that probably gave Yvonne and I the little boost that we needed when we were trawling through the volume of feedback, was actually the amount of positive things that people had to say in terms of the potential for this framework to really support them in the work. Two areas I think where people particularly spoke about, you know, potential for it was one was in relation to utilising some of those tools and learning from some of those tools as they went about their work. And the second, I think, was just, I suppose, in developing new institutional policies and approaches and systems to manage their work. So I think that kind of at institutional level is going to be very useful. But I also think that kind of an increased commonality between how institutions manage cases will also support us really to learn from each other. We've spoken about generative AI, for example, and, you know, contract cheating wasn't something I knew about a few years ago, you know, so this is a rapidly developing area. And all of higher education has skin in the game of doing all we can to support and uphold academic integrity. And often higher education institutions don't work together because there are, you know, reasons for that and competitive reasons. But one area where we absolutely can work together is in this field. So developing commonality, I think, is important. However, as Yvonne said earlier, the framework was never about advocating a prescribed approach. It's there about supporting, it's there about guiding, and it's really about helping people to develop their work in that area so that all of us are working to uphold academic integrity and as well to deal with academic misconduct as and when it arises. So I think both an institutional level and a sector level benefit, I hope, in the future.
Yes, thank you so much for that. And I love the idea of the common of developing, you know, areas where there's sort of commonality, a sort of, you know, some opportunity for a common approach. I think that would be probably really useful. And maybe it'll bring about more data as well as time goes on, which would be really useful from a national perspective as well as an institutional one. Are there any other, and I'll address this to both of you, maybe asking Yvonne first, what further developments would you like to see coming from this, or that you think may come from this?
I think, as Aisling said there, we've got this common language now. We're dealing with a commonality across the full sector. And this makes it a lot easier then to educate everyone within the sector. As Aisling said, you know, a lot of people don't understand contract cheating, for example. They've never heard of it. They don't know what it entails. And even generative AI now, as it comes, we have, you know, we have another section in the mix, shall we say, and all of this. So having that platform to talk to people and making sure then that we're saying the same thing across everything, it, I think, is very important that we're clear. Also, from the reputation of Ireland Inc., shall we say, and HEIs in Ireland, we are tackling this head on. We are going straight at it. We are not going to be left behind the field, hopefully, in the future, where we're looking at things saying, oh, Lord, how did that happen? How did we have a scandal here in Ireland when who was looking after the ship, as they say, when we were doing this? Now we have talked to everybody in the audience. We have gotten their opinion. We have got a structured approach. And we know now when we're talking about level one, two and three, what we're at. So I think a reporting structure, as you said there, Sue, that data, we'll have rich data now to come out of this. And we know where we're going. That doesn't mean to say that we can be thrown off by something else coming at us from left field. But at least we're looking at it seriously and we're prepared. We have the people in place in the in the higher education institutions to follow on with this. And I think that's really, really positive and sets us up well for the future in the Ireland Inc. case, as well as in the individual HEI case.
Thanks, Yvonne. Great comments. And Aisling, have you anything to add there?
No, because I think Yvonne covered it fantastically. But there's one thing I want to do before we finish up. And I think I'm doing this on behalf of Yvonne and I, which is just to thank so many people for their work and their contribution to this. Yvonne and I really were speaking about the framework today, but we're a small part of it. We had massive administrative support and guidance and help from yourself and Caoimhe and other colleagues in QQI. The working group, you know, did so much work in terms of laying the foundation stone and reviewing the work that we're doing. The steering committee, who supported this project and again provided high level guidance. Everybody who responded to the consultation. And then also we stand on the shoulders really of all of the people at national and international level who are really doing incredible work and research and understanding this area, because all of that has contributed to creating this framework. So I don't think you could say this is anybody's piece of work. This is, you know, this is so many people's piece of work. I think both Yvonne and I are very proud to have played a small part in bringing it to this stage. But we are absolutely indebted to the huge number of people who took part and contributed to it. And I hope feel like they own it. So thank you to them.
Thanks.
Totally agree. But I will say a special call out to the working group members who worked so hard on this. They were phenomenal. And to Sue and Billy, who reviewed it, as Aisling said, the key part as well.
Thanks. I mean, it's great to have it going out there, isn't it? And I think the next thing that's going to be so interesting to observe is when people start using it, you know, what happens, what questions come up, how it's adopted in all those various higher education contexts. And I suppose the last thing I'd like to say is, apart from saying, however many people contributed, you both led the project, and that was a very major part, not a minor part. I'd like to make that clear. And secondly, for any of those of you listening who have any further questions, we're so happy to receive them. If you send the questions into academicintegrity@qqi.ie, we're really happy to receive them, and we'll come straight back to you. So thank you so much, Yvonne and Aisling. It's going to be another exciting ride now, the implementation phase. And thank you again.
Thanks, Sue.
Thanks, Sue.